Pumpkin spice is everywhere right now. You can get it in your coffee, your donuts, and your ice cream, and other products like potato chips and gum. This hour, a pumpkin spice flavored horticulture day. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll find out about the plants that produce the spices that together make the iconic scent and taste of pumpkin spice. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, will be here, along with Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. We'll also talk about fall garden chores, and of course, we'll answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and pumpkins are everywhere this time of year. But the flavor known as pumpkin spice is perhaps even more omnipresent and popular than the pumpkin itself. This hour, we're going to find out about the plants that produce the spices that together make that iconic scent and taste of pumpkin spice. ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron will join us in just a few minutes, of course, to answer your questions about the plants in your life. With me right now is Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And what made you think to start researching the spices behind pumpkin spice?
Well, pumpkin spice is everywhere, so why not add it to Horticulture Friday, too?
Right. Well, and actually, I think it's a better fit here than it is in extra gum. I was looking around at some products today. There are beers.
Pumpkin spice Cheerios. I've seen pumpkin spice Cheerios.
Pumpkin spice beef jerky.
Oh, that doesn't sound good at
Maybe
all.
Maybe a snack for after the show.
Yeah.
So The smell that we associate with pumpkin spice, the flavor that we associate with pumpkin spice, mm-hmm. of course, has very little to do with pumpkins.
Right, right.
What's in there?
Well, most pumpkin spice blends or recipes include cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, cloves, and sometimes allspice. And that's the ratio may vary a little bit. It's by and large mostly cinnamon, and then the others are in smaller quantities. But those are the ones that are in most pumpkin spice kind of blends, if you will.
And, of course, all of those spices are things that we normally find in very mm-hmm. small containers already dried and yep. ground up. But you decided to look into the plants that these spices actually come from. So
yeah.
let's talk about cinnamon first.
Yeah, cinnamon. So this is a large tropical tree. It's grown, well, it's native to southern China and kind of the Southeast Asia, India, that part of the world. And actually, there are several species of cinnamon, the genus Cinnamomum, that are used for the spice cinnamon. And there's kind of two major ones. And the one that we often use in America and I think the UK and Canada also is the really hard kind of sticks that are broken up or ground up into a powder. And this is actually the dried inner bark of the tree. So the tree is coppiced after growing for about 5 years. New sprouts come up. 1 or 2 years after that, the sprouts are cut off. The outer bark is removed. The inner bark is peeled out and allowed to dry. And when it dries, it rolls up into those little quills that we're so familiar with that make up the sticks.
Interesting. So we can harvest cinnamon without killing the tree.
Yeah, although you do remove a huge portion of the tree. I mean, it kind of turns, instead of growing as a tree when it's producing, when it's produced for spice, it kind of turns into this cutback shrub that they utilize.
And so are there, in southern China, are there huge fields of these shrubs?
Well, it is native to southern China, but it's grown in a lot of parts of the world. And most of it is over in that corner of the world. I mean, it's around for sure. It's most of these spices are not in, you know, not like grown like our corn or soybeans are here, usually smaller farms. But you get a lot more out of a single plant when you consider how much you use on a daily basis. It's pretty small.
Right. Well, but it's also, it's amazing to think about how much is sold because it's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
And it's also so fascinating to think about how someone figured out that you could take the inner bark from this tree and use it
exactly.
as a spice.
Use it as a spice. And Richard was just saying that before we got started here today, that how do people figure this stuff out? And I guess it's just trial and error. And if you don't get sick, then you try it again. That's the only thing I can think of.
All right. Well, let's talk about nutmeg next.
So,
and sometimes we do see nutmeg sold in seed form, not just ground up in those little plastic containers.
Right. And it is the seed itself that we use. And nutmeg, again, is another large tropical tree. It's native to the Molucca Islands or the Spice Islands of Indonesia. And it produces year-round. It has kind of a little bit larger than a walnut-sized fruit. And inside that is that large nutmeg seed, which we grind up for the flavoring. Well, the other interesting part is the nutmeg plant, Myrstica fragrans, is one of the few that you actually get two separate spices from. The spice mace also comes from the same plant. And it is the there's a red kind of web-like, it's officially called an aril, that covers the seed. And if you harvest that and grind it up, it becomes mace.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm always finding out about things like cashews, for example, where it feels like so much of what surrounds the cashew that we eat is really wasted. In this case, you get two for one.
Two for one out of this one.
Terrific.
And it's if you look up pictures of it, it's really interesting. I mean, the seed itself is pretty. It's kind of a mottled egg-shaped seed. They actually look like little bird eggs in many ways. And then this little net-like, it's bright red that covers the seed when you pry the fleshy fruit off is really pretty too.
And these plants grow up to 45 feet tall. So.
Yeah, they're big trees with time. And it takes about 7 to 10 years for a tree to start really producing, and they hit their peak at about 20 years. So in many ways, it's a little closer to like an orchard or something like that in terms of it takes time to get established, and then you can start harvesting off of it.
Interesting. So if you're going to be a nutmeg farmer, you need to plan long term.
Yes, and you need to be in a much warmer place than Iowa.
Now, let's talk about ginger. And I think a lot of us are a little more familiar with ginger because we do see it in its original form in the store. We use it that way quite a bit. But where does ginger grow?
So ginger is native to India. It grows all over tropical Asia in particular. It is actually a fairly attractive plant, and unlike all the others we're talking about today, is a herbaceous plant. So this is not a woody shrub or tree, but instead actually quite ornamental green herbaceous plant that goes through a cycle where it grows, and then after about 8 or 10 months, it will die back, and that's when you dig up the fleshy rhizome that we see in the store, and then that's what is, you know, peeled, and then all sorts of stuff is done with it, whether it's dried or boiled or candied, or there's all sorts of things folks do with ginger.
And ginger can be pretty widely grown now, right?
Yeah, and I would say of all the plants we're talking about on our list, ginger is the one that you could, if you really wanted a fun project, would be the one that you might be able to grow here in Iowa as a house plant that you move in and out. Because it does okay in container culture. It really likes fertilizer. It needs really great soil. And it likes part shade, which makes it a unique crop. Because most of the time, many of the things we grow kind of as a crop or agronomically in our vegetable gardens or in our fields want full sun. And ginger in its native habitat is grown in shade.
Interesting. Let's talk about cloves now. And this is another one of those things where I just marvel at how somebody figured out how to use these. But so, what are they?
So they are the unopened flowers of a plant in the myrtle family. And so essentially what they do is they wait for the flowers to get to a very specific stage, and then they harvest and dry them. And that stage is, they're kind of a tall flower, four little sepals unfold, but the petals remain folded up and form a little ball in the center. And if you ever look at a whole clove, you can see this shape. And then that's when they're harvested and dried. It's kind of like, almost like broccoli. You know, you harvest broccoli before the flowers open. And in many ways, that's what you're doing here, although this plant is nothing like broccoli in any other respect. But it is kind of a, if you do let the flowers open, they're relatively attractive. They're kind of a white and red. They have really prominent stamens on them, but they can't be used as a spice anymore once the flowers fully open.
How big are the flowers? Because obviously things shrink when you dry them, but cloves are so little.
They are little, and the flowers aren't terribly big either. They're not much bigger than the cloves that you would find in the spice aisle at the grocery store. But they do grow in clusters, and those clusters tend to be about 6 to 8 inches across, and they're up in the tree. And so as these flowers get to the right stage, they're pulled off and dried, usually in the sun on a tarp, just like a lot of people do raisins out in the field. And then they're either ground up or used whole.
Wow. The harvesting window must be very brief for those flowers.
I think, like a lot of tropical plants, there's multiple times throughout the year that you have an opportunity to do the harvest. It's not like corn where there's just, one time a year it's done and then you start over. Often they have kind of a cycle that they go through throughout the year since they don't have the seasons that we do.
All right. And now the sometimes allspice.
Yeah.
What is allspice?
So allspice is a specific plant that's actually native. It's the only one on the list that's not native to Southeast Asia, that part of the world, Indonesia. This one is native to the West Indies. And so this is the green, unripe fruit of this plant that is plucked and dried. And it gets the name allspice because when it first got introduced to the British, they thought it tasted exactly like a combination of cinnamon, nutmeg, black pepper, and cloves together. So then they started referring to it as allspice.
Okay, so it was a shortcut spice.
Yeah, in some ways.
It still is.
Yeah, and this is one that's used, and actually all these spices are used throughout the world in a lot of different cuisine in places far away from their points of origin. And allspice certainly is used in a lot of Jamaican cooking, and that's not surprising being where it's native, but it's also an important component in some Middle Eastern cuisine too, and used quite extensively there.
We were talking about how amazing it is that anybody figured out how to use any of these spices, but then imagine the first person that put them all together.
Oh, I know. And the first pumpkin spice latte must have been amazing.
I think maybe they started with pie or But it's interesting because, so many pumpkin pies, of course, are made with different kinds of squash. Mm-hmm. So really these spices are more important to what we think of as pumpkin flavor than the pumpkin itself.
And I think that's what's most interesting about this whole thing is, pumpkin at the first, pilgrim's table, if you want to think of it that way, would have been pretty bland because none of this stuff would have been around for them to use.
Right. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. We've been talking about the plants that together produce pumpkin spice. And in a few minutes, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron will join us, and Aaron and Richard will answer your questions about the plants in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me this hour, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. And I need to mention that conversation about the plants of pumpkin spice was inspired by an article that you can read on the Ryman Gardens website if you'd like to find out a little bit more. And Richard Giron is also here now, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And now you can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, I know a lot of plants survived that first frost, and here we had another one.
Yes.
So it is and definitely.
So gradually they're kind of fading away, most of the tender things. But it's time, so
And the fall color is really reaching a peak in so many parts of the state.
Right.
Maybe not our most colorful fall ever, but it's awfully nice out there.
Yeah, I'd give it maybe a C plus, B minus.
I maybe give it a B. I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Let's start with some email questions. You, of course, can also call us. 866-780-9100 is the number. This one's from Tyler in Des Moines. I fertilized before planting a new lawn this fall. To prevent weeds from filling in some bare areas, should I use weed and feed in the spring as a pre-emergent, or is there something else I should use for prevention since I fertilized in the fall?
I think what I'd probably do is apply a pre-emergent herbicide fertilizer combination next spring.
All right.
And that's going to prevent the germination of crabgrass seed and maybe some other weed seed and also fertilize the lawn.
All right. And he also says, along those lines, how often should I fertilize?
That's kind of a personal decision as far as what you really expect from your lawn. I mean, for some people, the lawn is their pride and joy, and so they might fertilize 3 or 4 times. Another person maybe just once or twice. So as far as the best times to do it, basically it's spring in Iowa, also September and late October, early November.
Does it also matter the quality of your soil? If you have good, rich soil, you'd need to fertilize less, right?
Well, it kind of that would be a factor, but I think most lawns have fairly good soil, so that shouldn't be a major factor, but kind of what you want from your lawn as far as appearance-wise.
All right. He says he's a new homeowner, and you've helped him out a lot on this show so far. Here's a question from Mary in Des Moines. Should I cut back my butterfly bush now or in the spring, and how much?
Well, the butterfly bush is actually a woody shrub, but in Iowa, typically, it dies back to near ground level because of our cold winter. So I would actually not prune it at all in the fall. Just leave it and then go out there in early spring, look for signs of growth, and cut it back to that new growth.
All right. Here's one from Sarah in Des Moines. How does wild ginger compare to the ginger we see in the stores? Mm. And is wild ginger native to Iowa? Aaron, this one's probably up to you.
They're different plants entirely. Wild ginger that we see like in our woodlands here is given that name because it does sort of resemble, the smell sort of resembles, but otherwise they are completely different plants. The wild ginger isn't really a value for culinary use. It is a nice little ornamental, though.
All right. And here's one from Earl. I know the answer to this one, but we'll ask it. We're going to ask it every week for probably a long time. Is it still too early to prune oak trees, and what are we waiting for?
I would still wait until probably at the earliest, mid-November. The risk every day is getting smaller and smaller, but I'd still wait. It's been fairly mild this fall, so I'd probably wait at least until mid-November.
All right. You kind of have to wait until you're consistently uncomfortable outside.
When it's consistently cold, yes.
All right. I realize some people like that kind of thing. But let's go to the phones, 866-780-9100. Eddie is on the line in Traer. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
So I have a few evergreen trees that I planted in the spring between 5 and 6 foot, and over the summer a lot of them have kind of burnt up, and they're, you know, bright orange and stuff. They still have a little bit of green around them, and I was just wondering if there's any way that I can get them to, rejuvenate and keep them alive.
Well, if the majority of the foliage are the needles have turned that kind of brownish red, then I'm assuming that plant is in very poor condition or possibly dying or dead. So once they turn brown, they really can't come back from that very well. So you may lose some plants. Now, I will say it's been dry fairly recently, and I guess I would be inclined to go out and check the soil. And if the soil is getting dry, and if you can, I would go ahead and water them, and I will keep on doing that until the ground freezes in late November or December, because they need a chance to absorb water if we have a dry fall.
Okay, great. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Eddie. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we've got Bob in Tipton. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Just a couple days ago, I was at one of those stores, and I bought two peach trees very cheap, and I planted them. And I had two questions while I was digging. And one, the first question was, I planted them about 6 feet apart, and the grass was really thick and hard to dig through on one of them and not so much on the other. And it seems like, oh, about 15 or 20 years ago, my wife planted some Zosia plugs in that area.
Okay.
And the question is, does the Zosia have actual woody roots or rhizomes?
Well, they're not really woody, but they tend to be very thick. And that plant, Zosia grass, it is very, very hard to destroy once you have it established. It may take a year or more to destroy it if you want to. So once it's there, it's pretty well there for its lifetime.
Because I'm not sure if that's what it is I'm trying to determine, because we've noticed this area is harder to push the lawnmower through. The grass is thick, feels carpeting.
Yeah. Now, Zosia grass is a warm season grass, so it's pretty easy to identify in that since it is warm season, it doesn't green up early in the spring like bluegrass does. So you can go out there, let's say in early May, and the bluegrass should be nice and green. The Zosia grass should be still kind of a straw color. And so you can tell immediately at that point that this is different. This is a different grass.
Okay.
So if that's what you're seeing, a Zosia grass is kind of a tough grass. It's a little bit harder to mow, but it's also very, very thick. And because it's very, very thick, it tends to do a very good job of keeping out weeds, much better than bluegrass.
Okay, that might be what we have. I did read that it's supposed to turn brown early in the fall, but it is not brown yet.
Right, but it probably should, I would say, within the next week or two.
And I had another quick question. As I was planting, and I shook the dirt out of the sod, lots of worms came out. And as I filled in the dirt, I dumped worms in the bottom of the hole and all throughout the hole. And I was just curious, do those worms have to burrow their way down themselves? If I bury them, would that maybe kill them, or do they burrow themselves down into the grass?
I think they'll take care of themselves once you put them in there. They'll be fine.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Chris is on the line in Moravia. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
Well, hey, I planted a Bartlett pear tree last spring, and it survived the summer. And I have a small group of fruit trees nearby, but it's the only pear tree that I have. The other trees are mostly apple trees. And someone told me that those apple trees are capable of pollinating the pear tree. Or I was wondering, do I need to plant another pear tree to pollinate that?
Your friends are wrong. You need another tree, and you need a different pear cultivar. So an apple tree cannot pollinate a pear tree. So another different pear cultivar, it should be within at least 50 feet of that existing tree.
Okay. And then one other suggestion I'd had was for next spring to find a branch off of an old pear tree that is blooming and put it in a 5-gallon bucket of water nearby this pear tree, and that the bees would pollinate the existing pear tree from that.
Yeah, typically when you plant a pear tree, they don't flower for several years, typically 3, 4, or 5 years. So I really probably wouldn't expect much next year as far as flowers. They just have to kind of grow and mature. But when they reach that point, you could try doing that, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next up, Ray in Urbandale. Hi, Ray.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, if I bring in a potted plant, is there a systemic insecticide that I can use to help control insects like whiteflies and such?
Well, I think what I'd probably do in that case would be to use maybe insecticidal soap. That's a very common product. And when you do that, make sure you get it on the underside of the foliage, because that's where the whiteflies typically reside, is on the underside of the foliage. So I would probably take it to my porch or maybe my driveway and really spray it really, really well before you bring it inside.
Right. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's take another email question here. This one's from Ken in Cedar Falls. I have two heirloom pole bean plants that I got through the Cedar Falls Public Library Seed Saver Program. I'm supposed to save the seeds and return them to the program. How do I do this? I still have about a dozen fully formed pods on the plants. What's the procedure for saving bean seeds?
Well, just let the actual pods fully mature. And when they're fully mature, they gradually dry, usually turning brown or whatever. And then I would harvest the pods, split open the seed, place the seed on a, let's say, paper plate and let it dry for maybe a week or two. And then put them in a envelope, and they should be ready to go.
All right. It's a fairly simple plant to save seeds from.
So. Beans are one of the easiest to save seeds from.
Nice. A very good place to start. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's a question from Jean in Solon. I have a strawberry plant growing in a pot on the deck. What's the best way to overwinter it, and how should I save the many daughter plants on runners that have not been able to root in the ground?
Yeah, this is kind of hard because you just can't leave that pot outdoors. If you have a unheated garage, that might be the best option. But I'd leave it out basically probably until about maybe around mid-November and then bring it into that unheated garage, leave it there. Maybe check on it periodically to make sure that if it's drying out, it has some water. But it needs a place that is consistently quite cold but not extremely so.
Okay. And it still sounds like maybe it's a little hit or miss.
It is. It depends upon your garage. I know mine kind of goes from warm to cold, so that's not the best situation.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Brian is on the line next in Emmitsburg. Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a pussy willow bush that is about, 7 to 5 years old, and I noticed this summer quite a bit of dead material in it. Can I just cut that whole bush back to a given height and it will rejuvenate in the spring again?
You could. I would probably do that probably late March or so. And when you do that, you can take some of that prune material, bring it inside, and actually force those branches indoors. But typically pussy willows are very adaptable, and they'll typically come back pretty well.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
What heights would be appropriate to cut it back?
Is it a single trunk tree or multi-stemmed?
Multi-stem.
I'd probably cut it back by maybe, let's say, half or so.
Okay.
All right.
That would work fine.
All right,
Thank you, Brian.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Michael in Eldon. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm buying a house. We're going to close November 4th, and on the property are two apple trees, a cherry, and a pear. They haven't been well-maintained, and I have absolutely no experience. I'm wondering, what do I have to do to keep them alive this winter, and what do I have to learn by next spring?
Okay. Are they fairly big or fairly small as far as trunk diameter?
Trunk diameter, 3, 4, maybe 5 inches.
Okay.
At most.
What you might want to do for this winter is put something around the trunk so rabbits can't bother them, either hardware cloth or these white spiral strips that you can buy at garden centers. And next spring they need to be pruned. And I guess what I would do first would be examine the trees. If you find any branches that appear to be dead or broken, prune those out. And then I would look for other branches that may be inappropriate or defects. And those would be branches that are growing basically inward rather than outward. And those branches that are too low on the tree. And remove those.
Okay, and a friend of mine just mentioned offhand that any branches that are touching each other.
Right.
Is that a wife's tail or?
Well, if you prune out what basically are defects, and you still have a very, very dense tree, then you might do some thinning where you take out some of the smaller limbs to open it up a little bit.
Okay. And, between now and then, I'll go ahead and get online and I'll learn what I have to learn. But I'm a little worried because we're closing November 4th.
Okay.
You know, I have to do something right now, and I know that. I just don't know what it is. So thank you very much for your time.
And Michael, you said they haven't been that well taken care of in the past, so maybe give yourself a pass for a little while. You've got a lot of catch-up to do.
I wouldn't mind having apples and pears, though. So
yeah, there is that.
I'm kind of hoping for the best.
All right. Good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. And let's try and see if we can get one more call in before the break. Rachel in Iowa City. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
What's your question?
On the east side of my house is right next to Ralston Creek. And it's very shady and not a lot grows back there. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can plant because it's so shady and kind of muddy to shore up the ground and help it from not eroding into the creek.
All right. So erosion prevention in the shade. Any ideas?
Well, you could plant some native plants such as wild ginger would mm-hmm. be a possibility. Woodland phlox, Solomon seal, wild columbine, all those native woodland plants that would basically do very well in that situation.
And they're tenacious. They
yes,
live
they
even
are.
On a steep slope.
Yeah. So.
All right. Rachel, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. But, of course, you can join the conversation with your questions about the plants and trees in your life. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. And if you missed our conversation earlier about the plants that produce pumpkin spice, I tweeted out a link to Erin's article so you can have an easy reference to find out about them. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. And next, we will hear from Brian in Davenport. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a ton of voles that have raided my garden this year, and I also have a small high tunnel greenhouse, and they've gotten in there and have pretty much decimated my fruit and vegetable crops. Is there any good ways to control voles?
Well, normally voles are pretty secretive. They like to remain hidden. And so normally if you have, let's say, for example, some tall weeds or brush piles around the area, if you get rid of those and they have fewer hiding places, keep your lawn well mowed. And usually that kind of gets rid of them because, again, they like kind of areas where they can kind of hide and not be seen by predators. If that doesn't work, you can use mouse traps, and that works too.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Brian. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Erin is on the line now in Ankeny. Hi, Erin.
Good morning. I just have a quick question, needing some advice. We're looking to plant a cherry tree, preferably a semi-sweet variety or a sweet one.
Hmm. All right. Okay. Richard?
Well, if you want a sweet one, they're kind of iffy as far as hardiness, but there are some from Cornell University in New York that are quite hardy, better than most. And so I would look for things like gold, black gold, and white gold. Those are sweet cherries, and I think they're also self-fruitful. So I mean, you only need one tree to produce fruit.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. We only have space for the one tree, so that's kind of why we were leaning that way.
Yeah, so gold, black gold, or white gold.
It would be better to plant it in the spring, too, right?
Yes. Yeah, I would, definitely.
Okay, great. Because I was looking at varieties, and I think the tart ones, it looked like you could plant them in either the fall or the spring, but spring's best for the sweet variety.
Yeah, just because when you plant something in the fall, if we have a really hard winter, they might not do so well. But if you plant them in the spring, give them good care, then they have the whole growing season to get established.
Very good. Thank you kindly.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And I know we've talked about cherry trees quite a lot. And, of course, tart cherries do better in Iowa. But you feel like these newer varieties of the sweet cherries are really doing well.
Much better than things like Bing and Stella and things like that in the past. These are much hardier. They were bred for hardiness.
Is there still advice about trying to plant it in kind of a sheltered location, or does that matter?
I would make sure, as far as cherry trees, the main thing would be it needs to be a well-drained soil. They just do not like wet, poorly drained sites. They tend to get a root rot, and they can die very quickly. So I would look for a sunny location with a well-drained soil.
All right. And they're still fairly short-lived trees.
Maybe, hopefully, 20, 25 years, hopefully.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Becky is on the line in Ames. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
What's your question?
We would like to transplant some rhubarb. I want to know if it's still okay and what type of location we should look for to plant it in.
I would be inclined to wait till spring when it's just starting to come up to transplant the rhubarb. And you're going to want to move it to a spot that has full sun and well-drained, kind of moist, fertile soils, ideally. Although rhubarb is pretty tolerant overall, full sun's going to get you the best crop, if you will. I think it's easier to do in the spring, just as those like kind of cabbage-looking things are starting to come up out of the ground. That's when you can dig it up, divide it if you want to, and move it. And it's a lot easier than this time of year.
We're going to transplant it from my in-law's house, which the house is going up for sale.
Oh, well, if that's the case, then you can do it now. Rhubarb's a pretty hardy plant. You'll want to get as much of the root ball as you can. You'll want to know where you're putting it and get it there as soon as possible to try to get as much time in to get established before winter arrives.
And you may want to cover it with some straw maybe in late November, early December, to kind of insulate the ground so it doesn't get quite as cold.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
All right.
That helped me much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to Barb in Des Moines. Hi, Barb.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question about how to save an azalea bush that has a lot of ferns growing right at its base. Very dense ferns have encroached upon it, and I want to get rid of the ferns. I don't care about saving the ferns, but I don't want to damage the azalea bush. Do you have any suggestions?
It sounds like you might have ostrich fern. Are they kind of tall, the fronds?
They're real common around here.
Yeah.
I live in Des Moines. The mature ones are, 2 feet high, 2.5.
Okay.
That's a pretty aggressive spreader if it is ostrich fern.
Yeah.
And azaleas have a very shallow root system, so digging them up I don't think would be an option as far as trying to destroy them that way. As far as trying to dig up the actual ferns, I think that would not be a good option just because you damage the azaleas. So I think in this case, I might be inclined to use Roundup on the ferns as those fronds are developing early in the spring. Just kind of dab it on that foliage, and that would hopefully destroy it. Because digging, I don't think, is a viable option.
And in that case, you want to be extremely careful to just hit what you want to hit. Right?
Correct, yes.
All right. Well, good luck with that project, Barb. Next, let's go to Lori in Ames. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm just wondering if there's any way I can successfully overwinter lantana plants that I've had all summer long in pots outside.
Yes, you could. You're going to want to bring it in if you haven't brought it in already. You're going to want to bring it in soon. This is a plant that is like a zone 9 or 10, so it's or maybe zone 8, but that's still warm parts of the country. So it's not going to tolerate the cool temperatures very well. Bring it in. Make sure that it's in the brightest location you can find indoors. It'll probably decline a little bit, especially right after you bring it in, lose some leaves, drop all of its flowers, that kind of stuff. The plant with time will get pretty woody because it is a woody shrub where it's allowed to grow year after year. But you can bring it in, treat it like a house plant in a bright, sunny location. Know that it's going to not look the prettiest by the end of winter, but it should get you through to spring where you can put it back outside, start fertilizing it, and it should bounce back very nicely.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Lori. And here's a question from Keith in Fort Dodge. When is the best time to move a grape plant?
Ooh, grapes have a very deep root system. They are very, very hard to transplant. So that may not actually be viable unless it's a fairly new plant, maybe 1 or 2 years old. If it's an older plant, the best way to save that is to take some cuttings in late winter, where you go out and cut some of last year's canes, cut them into like 12-inch sections, and then put them in a plastic bag with some damp peat moss, put them in the refrigerator, leave them there, and then as soon as the ground is workable, put them in the ground, stick them in the ground upright, and hopefully some of those will root.
All right. And let's do a couple of email questions here. Related. This one's from Trevor. Is it too late to lay sod?
It is actually not. You can still do that. You want to do it as soon as possible. You can probably lay that until early to mid-November.
All right. And this one's from Rob. I have a few small bare areas of my lawn that need to be reseeded. Is it too late to plant grass seed?
It is too late, unfortunately. That's a little bit too late for that. We can usually get by until maybe early October, maybe the
10th. Yeah, that's really pushing it,
but
though.
Now we're into late October. It's a little bit too late for the seed.
All right. So wait for spring or wait for next fall?
Well, you can try in the spring, but the best time actually is mid-August to mid-September.
All right. Back to the phones. MJ is on the line in Panora. Hi, MJ.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
When our house was built 21 years ago, the landscaper planted two service berries on either side of our front door, probably 8 to 10 feet out on either side of the walk, that have been terrific, but they've gotten really big, and I think we had them topped off about 6 years ago. But now they've gotten way too tall again. They're kind of encroaching on the front door, but all of the I was going to have them topped again, but almost all of the leaves and the growth is on the upper half. If we have them cut back, will they start to flourish from the bottom up again, or do I just need to take them out, put in something else?
Well, so are these multi-stemmed plants?
Yes.
Okay. So you can, you know, topping in general is, especially for a plant like service berry, isn't going to be a great option, and it because of what you just described. Usually what
right.
we would recommend is selective pruning, and it will sprout back up from the base some. It's not like lilac in terms of sprouting up from the base, but normally I would have recommended find the one really offending branch and remove that all the way to the base, and then hopefully it would encourage a little bit more growth at the base, and then you can kind of keep the plant that way. Now that you have multiple stems with topped growth, you have a little more difficult road ahead of you. If it's really bothering you, you could cut it back fairly close to the ground, at least the maybe a third of the worst parts of the plant, see what comes up from the base. And if your next step is removing them, then that's a good first step because you have nothing to lose. If it doesn't work out, then you can replace them. But
wouldn't it take a long time, though, for that bottom growth to come up? I mean, like 3 or 4 years?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it can. Like I said, it's not as vigorous coming back like that as, say, something like lilac. So you don't have that option. But by and large, usually one of the worst things you can do to a plant like this is actually top it. It really tends to really ruin the structure of the plant. And removing selective branches back to their point of origin would have been a better approach. But it's more work that way, absolutely more work.
And I think I'm not patient enough to wait 3 years.
So are you looking for a recommendation of something else to plant there? Or?
I think I'll find something else.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. It's good to know your limits, right?
Yeah.
Tom is up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I have a question. Is there a general rule of thumb for pruning ornamental trees and shrubs, like lilac, burning bush, crab apple?
Well, as far as, one rule basically.
Freeze or after freeze.
Yeah, as far as pruning a lot of things, especially tree-wise, late winter is a good time. Typically, March would be a good time if we have some nice, mild, late winter days going out there and pruning them. Make sure that you prune them correctly. Typically, we make pruning cuts at logical points at the point of origin as far as a branch or side branch. In the case of trees, you want to cut back to the branch collar. As far as some of the shrubs, like, for example, the burning bush, which is a foliage plant, you can definitely prune that in March, no problem. Now with the lilacs, you have a question. They bloom in the spring on new growth, so you could prune them in March, but that will affect the bloom. You won't have as much bloom in the spring, or you could prune them immediately after blooming, so you have that option. So it kind of depends upon the plant.
Okay, on the lilacs, they've gotten quite tall, and I'd like to get those cut back pretty much.
Okay.
What would I do with that?
What I would do in that case is I would go out there in March, and I would select maybe 4, 5, 6 of the largest, biggest shoots and cut those off near the ground. Get rid of them completely as best you can. And then next year, I do the very same thing. And basically, over time, you're getting rid of all the growth, the old growth, encouraging new growth in the base, and you'll have a younger, more vigorous plant that's smaller in size. And that's kind of the approach that I would take.
Okay, that's very helpful. And then just another quick question. Trees that I planted just this summer, I've heard you do not fertilize those till spring?
Well, we rarely have to fertilize trees and shrubs in Iowa. We're very fortunate. For the most part, we tend to have very good fertile soils. And so usually it's not necessary to fertilize trees and shrubs. I would only fertilize something if, let's say, I plant a tree or shrub, and maybe 3 to 4 years later, it just isn't growing very much, then I might fertilize it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And we've got two listeners with the same question. When is the best time to dig up cannas? And one of them says her first frost only browned the top leaves. So
yeah,
how do you know?
We're doing all of that right now at Ryman Gardens. After the first frost, the leaves will start to die back. So if you have more than, I would say, 30 to 50% of the leaves brown and mushy at this point, you could dig them up, cut off that foliage, and store those tubers.
All right, so you don't have to wait until they're completely dead.
No, and in most cases, that's really hard to do, because if you wait until they're brown and crispy, it's going to be pretty late in the fall.
All right, and here's from Al. I have 4 beautiful hydrangea plants, probably 6 years old, in a perennial garden in mostly direct sun. I'm never sure how best to care for them. Do I cut the canes in fall or spring, and do I fertilize?
I would never prune them in the fall. I would wait and prune them in the spring, and it really depends upon what type they are. If they're the old-fashioned hydrangea that grows about 4 to 5 feet tall with the big, huge, kind of round flower heads, you can cut those right back to the ground in the spring. If they're one of the big-leaf hydrangeas that have either pink or blue flowers on those, I'd wait till them to leaf out, and then just cut out the dead wood.
All right. Thank you very much for all your calls and questions this hour. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Richard Geron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron and Aaron Stile, thank you.
It's great to be here.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. We had production assistance today from Divine Huff. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.